Coming to you live from the West Antrim Regional Choreographers Ball, it's this week's Apocalypse. I'm your co-host and flamenco expert, by which I mean I don't know anything about flamenco, but it's a dance I remember the name of, Kevin Lenihan. With me, as always, is lead judge of this competition, John Ferris. John, what do you know about dancing?
Next to nothing, which I think qualifies me for this role.
It's great that you're a judge.
Yep.
Then that's fantastic. Now, I kind of want to sort of assess your judging abilities here, because I don't want to alarm you, John, but there's a bomb in the building.
Ugh.
And if you don't pick the best dancer, we're all gonna die.
Oh, I thought it was going to be some like it's going to be like Speed only with dancers.
No. We decided that was cruel. You know, that's kind of like you know how you like, you know, there was all those protests about, you know, treat Keanu Reeves ethically after that movie came out.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So we're not allowed to do shit like that anymore. So we have to victimize the judges instead.
Ah, fine.
So the judges, you're going to get blown up. If you don't decide who the best dancer is. Now, I'm assuming, based on what you've said thus far, that you might be in a bit of a pickle there, because we have 3,000 dancers to pick from.
I'll just pick the prettiest one, then.
No, that's not how it works. See, you've fallen at the first hurdle, John. Okay, now, if you'd said the one with the most elaborate dress... You may have got a couple of points there, but that's not all there is to it.
One with the bendiest legs.
Well, that conjures up all manner of dystopian and nightmarish images. The things people might do to win at competition. I think the best thing to do, though, John, and this may surprise you, is to watch 3 movies.
Ooh.
All about dancing and or dancers. And then you can use that, the metrics that they use in those films to judge the good dancing, in order to make your proper final decision.
Mm-hmm.
So we have from 1987, Dirty Dancing, directed by Emil Ardolino.
Mm-hmm.
And the log line for that: spending the summer at a Catskills resort with her family, Frances Baby Houseman falls in love with the camp's dance instructor, Johnny Castle.
And the man that stopped the baby cornering epidemic.
Indeed, the terrible baby cornering epidemic that America was experiencing at the time. He really opened people's eyes,
yep,
didn't he? Then, from the year 1992, we have Strictly Ballroom, directed by Baz Luhrmann. The log line for that: a maverick dancer risks his career by performing an unusual routine and sets out to succeed with a new partner. Alrighty. Diddly-diddly-day. And then, from 2010, which is 14 years ago now, Josh.
Shh, no.
It's wild. We have Black Swan, directed by Darren Aronofsky. And the log line for that: Nina is a talented but unstable ballerina on the verge of stardom. Pushed to the breaking point by her artistic director and a seductive rival, Nina's grip on reality slips, plunging her into a waking nightmare. Sounds like a fun dancing movie. It ain't no Step Up the Streets 2 or whatever. I think that's that. Or is it Step Up to the Streets?
Yeah, who knows.
And is that a pun? Are we stepping up to T-O the Streets? Because it's the number 2 in the title.
I think you're asking the wrong person.
Either way, John, bring it on. I'm referencing all these ones we're not watching, you see. Because
yeah.
I don't want to watch Bring It On or Step Up or Step Up the Streets or...
Footloose.
Yeah, so Footloose might have been funny, but at the same time, no. So anyway, let's sit down. I don't have anything against Kevin Bacon. I just want to make that clear. People might think that, but I don't. All right.
You just have a thing against those phones that he's always trying to hawk.
Indeed, he was good in Tremors. And that bit in the original Friday the 13th when he gets the arrow through his throat's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But anyway, John, let's sit down and watch these movies. All right, John. So here we have Dirty Dancing, or as I accidentally wrote it when I was writing my show notes, Dirty Dancing.
Dirty.
I wrote Dirty Dancing.
Oh, they need to make it like an Irish piss takeover called Dirty Dancing.
Yes, they do. That was the thing. I wrote it and then looked up at it and then I just laughed and laughed and laughed and then was like, no, I have to change that back. But anyway, John, Dirty Dancing from 1987, starring the Swayze Master himself, Patrick Swayze. I'll just read the logline again because, you know, it leaves out... To be honest, I think it leaves out the most crucial detail of what this film's actually about. And I hadn't seen this film before.
No.
Because I'd never watched Dirty Dancing before this.
Wow.
And I was not prepared for what the actual story was. But it's the logline says that the story is this. Spending a summer at a Catskills resort with her family, Frances Baby Houseman falls in love with the camp's dance instructor, Johnny Castle. Now, that's not really the plot of this film, John. The plot of this film is that a Silver Spoon Kid teen learns how to dance in order to cover for someone at their job while they go and get a backstreet abortion. And then has to continue covering for her because the backstreet abortion is botched and she is effectively disabled and crippled by the pain. That is what the logline should say, but it doesn't say that at all.
But that doesn't scream romance.
Doesn't it, John? Doesn't it?
What romantic story doesn't start with a backstreet abortion?
Exactly, John. That's a very good point, and I'm glad you made it. So, John, what did you think of Dirty Dancing?
Ah, you messed it up. You should have. What you should have asked was, did I have the time of my life?
Did you have the time of your life? The fucking hell, I fucking hate that song.
No, not really.
I hate that song, John.
Yeah, I actually...
It's so out of place in this film.
We'll start there where all the 80s songs are so out of place.
Yeah.
It has a fucking really awesome soundtrack.
It does.
Whenever it sticks to this era that it's set in.
Yeah.
And it's all these brilliant 60s hits and you're like, fuck, this is great. And it's the only thing that really keeps you going because the dialogue's fucking rubbish.
It's so dire.
There's literally bits where, like, me and my wife were laughing about... people come into rooms and, like, go, I'm sorry, I didn't realise. And then it just hangs in there. And we were like going, what did she not realise? Because she knew... Because this happens at one point when Baby goes in after her dad's been to see... I don't care about spoilers in this one either. To see the woman after her backstreet abortion.
Indeed.
And sorts her out. Whatever he does. But like Baby
he does off-screen doctor magic is what he does. When he goes to see, was it Penny? Is it Penny's the poor girl?
Yes, Penny, yeah. But like, Baby comes in the next day and goes and says those exact lines of, I'm sorry, I didn't realise. And I was sitting there going, what did she not realise? Because she was getting the money to her for the backstreet abortion. So like, she knew all of this. What is the bit that she didn't realise?
I don't know, maybe the backstreet abortion wouldn't be performed by a very professional doctor.
Oh yeah, it was just a guy with a penknife.
It was a guy, and I think that's like some weird, like, and I'm going to just go back to like our sort of school days here, the kind of thing that you'd be told by a teacher at Catholic school about abortions.
Yep.
It's a backstreet abortion and they do it with this and that. And that. Actually, in reality, a lot like whenever you talk about like a backstreet abortion that you're paying an actual doctor for, usually it's done in secret at an actual clinic.
Yeah.
Was actually the case. Now, there were a lot of like people like DIYing it. I watched one of the worst cinema experiences I ever had was to go see a film called, was it Vera Drake? I think it was called.
Mm-hmm.
In which was a movie about a backstreet abortionist in the 1950s in England, And it was the single most miserable experience I ever had in a cinema. Whatever year it came out, I must have been like 17 or something. So a friend of ours organized like this weird double date that I went on. And that was the film. That was the film they chose.
Excellent.
And I could not get out of there and get the fuck home quick enough. Tell you that. Absolute nightmare. But anyway, Dirty Dancing. Yes, the Backstreet Abortion thing is just, it's so overblown. And like, yes, it's a terrible thing when people have to turn to that kind of thing. But the way they treat it in this movie is almost like the cartoonish propaganda that we got fed when we were like 14 or 13 or whatever age we were, getting taught this crap in our our religion class.
Yeah,
in school.
Jesus.
Absolutely. But anyway, John, let's get to the sexy dance man.
Yeah.
Yay. So yeah, as you said, the dialogue in this film is garbage. Yeah. It's just
which kind of leads me to kind of like, I actually do think that they do a fantastic job acting wise because they've so little to work with that.
Yeah,
it's maybe not acting, but it's their charisma like does bring a lot of like makes this less painful than it kind of could have been.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been The Room. It could have been a Tommy Wiseau sort of directed nightmare performance. But everyone's super fucking enthusiastic and throws themselves into it, which it makes sense for like the kind of movie this is when you look at like the dancing in it. They're all going fucking hardcore, and Mr. Swayze himself, he's a very good dancer.
He's a very good dancer. It seems very natural with them.
Yeah, they're all very good dancers, and the dancing's very good for dancing. Again, I don't feel like I'm necessarily a great judge of this, but they're all very good. And
we're told quite often that he is the best. So
he is the best.
I mean, I believed it.
They never fucking shut up about it. And people constantly say about him and tell him that he's, and I quote, so bad.
Yeah.
And like, he's not like,
no,
he's really not.
He's all right.
There's a point where like they go on like a wee day trip picnic and all that, and she's in the car and she said, "You're so bad." I'm like, "No,
you're so wild after he breaks his own car window because he forgot his keys.
Yeah, he's not, he's just a dipshit.
Fucking stupid.
He's a dipshit, he's stupid, he locked his fucking keys in his car for his start.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not gonna begrudge anyone for doing that by accident, but the way he gets them is actually stupid. And then she's like, "You're so wild," and he's like, "He's not that wild."
No.
And he's not this like bad guy. And like, everyone gets, for I don't understand why people have that impression of him, because he doesn't behave in a way to me, even like the parents go, "Oh," like whenever her dad sort of finds out about the whole thing, like disapprovingly, yes, the abortion thing, and he gets the wrong end of the stick and thinks that like, "Oh, you got this girl pregnant," which he doesn't. He could say one fucking sentence and clear that up, and he just chooses not to.
Even when he goes to like help Penny out in the middle of the night, by the way, like, so the dad is actually a really dead on fella.
He's a stand up guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, he goes, "Who's responsible for this girl?" And Patrick Swayze, or Johnny Castle says, "I am." What the fuck else is he meant to think?
Yeah, no. Why did he say that? Why did he say that though?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, he could have just said, "I'm a friend, I'm looking after her."
Yeah.
That's all he had to say. But I'm responsible.
It's that soap opera bullshit of just like, they can't say, they can't do it realistically, or like go, "Oh, look, it was this guy," but or they don't even have to say it was this guy, but like, go, "Look, it was someone else, and I'm her friend, I'm looking after her, blah, blah, blah." And then the guy go, "Oh, okay, right, I'll sort out, get the fuck out."
Yeah, it's piss poor writing is what it is. It's someone who couldn't think of a conflict, so they had to gin one up.
Yeah.
They had to have a conflict between these two characters, and they had to gin one up, and to gin it up, they had to have the characters behave incorrectly.
Yeah.
They had to have them behave in a way that human beings don't behave.
And even like the relationship just kind of leapfrogs to like, you know, they now love each other. Like, you never really get the sense of it growing. There's no dialogue. Yeah. Like, they barely speak. I think the most they say is like, "You danced well tonight," after the show.
That's it.
And then
He's like, "I don't feel bad. You did really well. Is that him falling in love?"
Yeah.
I don't know. And I mean, it's Patrick Swayze. He's very handsome. Yes. He's very handsome. I'd say he'd probably be, I mean, speaking as a straight white male, I would say that Patrick Swayze would probably be quite easy to fall in love with, maybe, if you're an impressionable heterosexual teenage girl.
Okay, keep it in your pants, Kevin. Keep it in your pants.
I'm just saying. It's Patrick Swayze, like...
But it gets worse
when... He was in Roadhouse later.
It gets worse when they actually are in love, in inverted commas, because then the conversations are, you're so brave. It's like, no, I'm not so brave, you're brave. You're brave because you dance.
You're brave because you dance. You dance the scary dances. You dance the dances no one else dares to dance. I will say this, though. I did find this film quite entertaining.
It's not
necessarily a terrible film. It's narratively, it's bunk. And the dialogue is bad, but I think it's fun. Now, one thing did annoy me about it, John, and I don't know if you noticed this about it, but it was driving me a bit mad until I learned to ignore it. All of the sound in this film has so much reverb on it. Except for the dialogue, which sounds like the dialogue sounds straight up like they're in a goddamn recording studio, but the sounds when people are moving things has so much reverb and echo on it. Even like, there's a point near the start where a guy's setting up a table and he's putting plates down and forks, and the tinkling is echoing like they're in a fucking giant metal bucket.
That's to make it sound like the place is bigger.
Yeah, I think it's that they had a tiny soundstage and they wanted to make it seem like they were outside.
Yeah.
But to me, it made it sound like they were inside a huge space. It made it sound like the whole film was shot in a fucking cave, which aggravated the fuck out of me until I learned to ignore it and just sort of live my life.
I can't say I noticed too much, but yeah, like now that you say, like, even just when you're saying that setup, there is something in my head going, yeah, there was something off about it, because I only watched it last night.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of fresh in my mind.
Yeah, well, it was echo for me. For me, it was just like, why is there so much echo? And once I noticed, because that was quite early on when he was talking to a guy who was setting up a table, and the tinkling was echoing. I was like, why does that sound like that? And then I just noticed it for the rest of the film.
Yeah.
I was just like, everything sounds like that now, except the music, which then sounds really out of place. The music then to me didn't sound like it was part of the scene, even the music that was supposed to be playing. Sometimes when music was playing on a radio, it had loads of reverb on it, and that aggravated me. But whenever they were doing the dancing professionally, it was like, it just sounds like it's the music track.
Yeah.
And then when that song comes on, it's so out of place that... I've had the time of my life. I was like, there's synths all over this.
Yep. There's synths, and the bass doesn't sound right for the time. And it just. And the bit that annoyed me as well on the look of things is like, a lot of the hairstyles and stuff are 80s as well. Like, they made fucking effort to make it like fit the 60s properly. Yeah,
it almost feels appropriate to me, though, because, like, I think there were when they were making this film, they were like, yeah, we set this in 1968, but who fucking cares? Who gives a shit?
That's... And I can already
look,
see...
I bet you there's
some people who love this who would have the opinion of, like, that's what makes it so timeless. Like, yeah.
It's confusing.
I'm
confused about when it's set, so that equals timeless. Yeah.
And that resort, by the way, looks like hell on
miserable.
Earth. Miserable. Oh, my God.
I feel
part
like
of the, some of the activities, wearing wigs.
Yeah, what was... I was so confused in that scene. I was so confused about... They were all sitting... Look, I didn't even recognize, because I didn't immediately recognize that it was Jennifer Grey in that scene, because it was a woman with like black hair and like a fringe.
Yes.
And then she took that wig off, and I was like, what's going on? Because it was people doing their hair, I thought.
No. This was the wig trying activity.
And they were... Yeah. But they were... Yeah. They were doing their hair, but then it was wigs.
Yeah.
And then they just took them off and walked away, and I was like... Why were they doing that? What? But I feel like they address that towards the end of the film. The guy that owns the place has a conversation with someone where he says, like, you know, these kids don't want to do this anymore and blah, 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 oh, blah, yeah. You know. Not, and they talk about the fact that it's bad out and weird.
Not a bit of wonder.
I know. But, like, Wink, yeah, that was the most, that was the strangest thing in the whole film.
Yeah.
Was the part where they were styling their hair and then they took the hair off and I was like, what was happening there? Why were they doing, why was this line of girls doing that?
That's what women do, you know what they're like.
Is
for
it?
Trying on wigs. I don't know. That's,
oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, John. 100%.
Like, as an activity of like this place, which I assume is very expensive.
Yeah, because everyone at it's disgustingly rich in a way where they're so far removed from reality. And everyone who works there is disgustingly poor in a way that almost seems cartoonish and very serious. They're all the staff are very serious about dancing.
Everyone loves the dancing.
The secret after hours dance that no one's allowed to know about. It's just, is it just the staff?
Yes, it's just the staff.
Yeah.
I think the main problem I have with this movie is like there's a lot of like stuff, there's a lot of other stories going on that don't get fully fleshed out that to me are more interesting or more like characters even where the character kind of Johnny's cousin or friend or whatever, the one who carries the watermelons who... brings baby into the fold. Like, yeah, he's, I kind of liked
there
him.
He's just there to show up and tell her, we need you.
Yeah.
And stuff. That's like, his function.
But he's like, what kind of, you know, he's seen that this girl was nice and he'd like let her, kind of brought her into their wee secret party and all. He's like, okay, this guy's interested. I want to know more about him. He's like, nope, nope. Once he's fulfilled his role, he does not get looked at. And then you've the old couple who are stealing wallets, who's like,
yeah,
that's a better story.
I want to watch an entire film about them.
Yeah.
I want to watch the film about the really old couple who are picking people's pockets. They're going to rich people resorts and stealing from the rich people.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great film.
I think it was an injustice that they got caught.
Absolutely. I think I'm disgusted that they were brought to justice and that the guy, is it Johnny? Forgetting his
Johnny Castle.
Name. Johnny
the
Castle.
Names even are terrible.
I'm sorry that Johnny Castle got off with that. I would have wanted them to get away first.
Yeah.
And then the sequel is about them, maybe. Dirty Dancing 2. I bet there's a Dirty Dancing 2. Is there? Do I want to look it up?
Maybe not.
Do I want to look it up?
I'm so curious.
As a final aside to this whole thing, I'm going to see if there's a Dirty Dancing 2.
Dirty.
But I doubt there is. 1 second there. Oh, there's a 2017 television film. There's Dirty Dancing Havana Nights, John, which had Swayze in it.
What?
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Well, you got to pay the bills somehow.
Maybe he wasn't in it. You know what? That might have been just Google lying to me. No, he wasn't in it.
No.
As far as I can tell, he's not in it. Diddly diddly do 58. It's set 10 years before.
Ooh,
my gosh. Cuban dance music. Oh my gosh. Wonderful. Sounds like a pile of shite.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll find a reason to watch that at some point in the future, okay?
we don't have to.
Alright, so did you like Dirty Dancing? Do you think it was would you say it was a good film?
I wouldn't say it's a good film as such, but it's not bad either. I can see why I can see why people enjoy it, and it's not the kind of thing that, it's not like Cthulhu where I fucking was
you vehemently hated
it, like where it felt like it was literally eating parts of my life. I could feel the life draining out of me. Like, this was kind of fun. I could sit with my wife and like laugh at all the ridiculous things and the dialogue and things like that.
Yeah.
And you can still appreciate the choreography and the music for the most part. Again, we both had a problem with just that the 80s stuff just feels so shoehorned in that
it feels so out of place. It really does.
Like, instrumentally, as I mean, especially for me and you, like we know what recordings of the eras sound like. It might not be too bad if you're not as kind of familiar with that stuff.
And just say music nerd.
Yeah.
Just say nerd.
No,
John.
But it's not even that. Like, you know, I think anyone who listens to a lot of 60s stuff would like you without even knowing, yeah, without knowing exactly why it's different, you know, something sounds like you could stick on a new track today that we recorded in a 60s style, and someone could go, oh, it sounds very 60s, or like the bass sounds very like you know, 70s or whatever. Like there's
like it's more trebly, a bit more tinny, yeah, kind of thing and that kind of stuff, yeah.
You know, but I think, and like it's really obvious whenever synths start coming in, you're like, what the fuck's going on?
I've had the time of my life crap. As soon as that started, I was like, this is like from a different film.
Yeah.
No, and he's playing to the camera now. He's not dancing in a room full of people. He's dancing at the camera.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
But anyway, I would broadly agree, John. I think this is pretty good still. But it's not good, but it's good. It's fun.
It's fun, it's stupid fun, and it's like, it's the same as like, to me, it's the same kind of level as like a kind of middling Marvel movie, of just like, you can stick it on and just kind of enjoy it and think nothing more of it.
It's
and
like
go,
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Ant-Man and the Wasp of dancing movies.
Yeah, you know, that, like, that kind of thing where it's like, you can see all the flaws and I go, how was this so popular? But at the same time, it's like, it's fine.
Yeah, also, I don't know what's so significant about that no one puts baby in the corner line, because it's not really delivered in any kind of powerful or significant way to me.
It was.
And there I couldn't tell, did I miss a setup for it? That the people were putting her in the corner. Like, she was sitting in the corner in that scene, sort of.
It's, but does that count as a corner? I mean, it was a pillar, I suppose.
It was next to a pillar, so yeah.
And I mean, you know, it was a good seat, like, she could see the stage.
Yeah.
I like to sit in the corner.
I like to sit in the corner.
But then I'm not a baby. I'm not a baby, so maybe that's why.
Yeah, especially if I'm at some kind of event where someone might ask me to dance. I'm definitely hiding in the corner.
Yeah,
then.
I love the end where like not a single person is doing what I would be doing. I'm just like, nah, I'm all right.
Yeah, I'm just. Well, now that everyone's busy dancing, I'm gonna run over to the bar and get a pint while there's nobody there. That's what I think during shit like that. I'm like, now's my chance.
Like everyone loves these strangers dancing like so much. Like they're so invested,
they're so hype for it. And I'm like, nah, give me like 3 Peroni, mate. Cheers. I'm just gonna load up now. So yes, ultimately, it's all right. And it's fun as long as you're not expecting, you know, Proust or, let's say, something more dramatic, like Shakespeare, I guess. That's too cliched. It's not Shakespeare. It's not Marlowe. How about that?
There we go.
Not Marlowe, but it's fun and stupid. All right? Okay. Well, John, if you had to, like, use your scorecards... and, like, give, like, say, Dirty Dancing, like, a number. What would it be?
What's it out of?
I think it's out of...
Is it always out of 10?
I don't know. In gymnastics, it's out of, like, it's out of, like, 8.
Oh, that's weird.
I think it's out of some odd number. And, like, when you do the Olympics gymnastics, and I think maybe the diving as well, it's all marked out of 7 or 8.
Okay.
Something like that.
Is that where Ebert got his
4-star scale? Oh, I hate the 4 stars. Just do 5. 5 is the right now again. You know what, John? I'm going to say we revolutionize the industry right now. Ooh. All right, we apply my film review and video game review logic to dancing, and you instigate, as lead judge, a 5-star scale. No point nothings. All right, it's going to create a lot of, like, draws and people at the same levels here, but fuck them. All right?
You don't know who you're dealing with, Kevin. You know,
these dancers are serious, aren't
they? Yeah, the whole industry, like, you know, if you start trying to create waves, like, you will get, you'll be sleeping with the fishes.
Indeed, the people in the back rooms, the backroom dealers will get us. Speaking of backroom dealers, John, Strictly Ballroom from 1992. Directed by the now famous Baz Luhrmann.
Yes.
And you can see a lot of his future work in this in a lot of ways. So yeah, Strictly Ballroom, the log line, I'll read that one. A maverick dancer risks his career by performing an unusual routine and sets out to succeed with a new partner. John, what did you think of Baz Luhrmann's Strictly Ballroom?
No, this is just great. This is just pure fun from almost. There's like a slight wee preamble where Anyone new to the movie will be like, going, not sure. But then as soon as the mother comes on, like, crying, that where did she go wrong, that the son started dancing.
She's just in bits, eventually. Yeah. I love all that, the cutting to the talking heads kind of stuff with them being interviewed is wonderful. It's so funny.
The hyperbolic nature of the way they talk about just their son just doing a different dance is fantastic, and everything's, like, so over the top and melodramatic, but, like, purposefully.
Yes.
I can almost speak.
Yes.
And it just works so well. We're like, it's almost like the evolution from Dirty Dancing. We're like, everyone's very, in Dirty Dancing, everyone's like very straight faced, kind of saying, like, you know how important this is. Whereas in Strictly Ballroom, they bring it to the next level where it just becomes fucking ridiculous.
Absolutely. It is, everything is turned up to, I was going to draw a comparison to Spinal Tap anyway, so I'm going to pull a joke from Spinal Tap and say that everything's turned up to 11.
Yeah.
As a joke,
mm-hmm.
as like a, look how crazy these people are about this thing that is ridiculous, and no one really cares about.
No,
they care about so much.
It's like a different universe where ballroom dancing is the most important thing in the universe.
Yeah, and like they're all so obsessed with it.
Yeah,
they are crazy about it, to the point where they're like match fixing essentially, and like trying to like talk people out of things, and everyone's so insistent to be like, oh no, you have to be partners with this person because then you'll win. Yeah. It's like people putting together, it's like when you see like sports movies about like them trying to like get the right players, or even you look at real life and you look at like football teams. I mean like British football teams, like, well, I'll say British football, European football teams, and they're all like trading players to like make the best team, and everyone gets so amped about it. Like I would hear people talk about that and I'd be like, you guys are so fucking into this.
Yep.
It's creepy. It's like that. Everyone's like, oh, Tina Sparkles, he's gonna dance with Tina Sparkles. You're like, that's fucking hilarious. First of all, that her name is Tina Sparkles. But yeah, this film is like, I'd seen this film a long time ago by accident. I think it was on TV, and I was like, Strictly Ballroom, you hear the name of that. And especially in the modern context of stupid TV dance competitions, right?
Yeah.
Well, they've taken the name of this film and spliced it with
Dirty Dancing.
Dirty Dancing. And there's something else called like Come Dancing is another thing. No. So they got that Strictly Come Dancing, right? And they've taken this film. This film's ripping the piss out of that shit so hard. But also, everyone in it is clearly like a really, really good dancer as well. Yeah. They're all like crazy good dancers. So they're obviously like, I think, because I read up a little on this, how it came about was that when Baz Luhrmann went to a performing arts school, went to a drama school, and was learning how to do filmmaking. But all the other people around him, there's a lot of people who were his friends who were dancers and stuff. And him and his mate, is it Andrew Bovell, I think, they wrote a play that, because he wanted to like direct something, so they were like, let's make a play. So they got like a play guy, a guy who was into like the drama, and then the dancing people, like, what can we make that uses all our skills? And they made this ridiculous play about a ballroom dancing competition that involved all of the people at the school, like who were dancers.
Brilliant.
You know, and then he went on to like, oh, well, whenever he's making a film, he was like, well, I can adapt this into a screenplay then.
Yeah.
And that's how this became a film. I think that's great.
It's so well done.
Yeah, and then, so you've got all, and then so it's like, so he knows how to direct dancers as well, and like which has shone through in all of his later works.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Moulin Rouge is all that, and it was fucking huge.
It's all that with a bigger budget, and not so much making fun of it, I suppose.
Yeah, not really. It's like it's reveling in it still. Yes, it's still reveling, because there's a certain amount of reveling in the glitz and the shininess in this, while also ripping the absolute piss out of it, and in like, this wonderful way.
But I also think it has a lot of like heart in a way. Like, it's very much a satire, but
yeah,
at the same time, there's this underlying message, and it's still satire on a bigger scale, I suppose. Yeah. Of just like, there's no point doing art unless you're doing it with passion, unless you're bringing something to it. You know, it's this like whole idea of, you know, this like the dance is meant to be passionate, and the competitions that they go to have it down to this like really boring.
Yeah, it's like
boxed in so badly.
Yeah, it's like when you go to school. I mean, they do it in like the Dead Poets Society, let's say.
Yes,
which is not a satire at all. It's a very sad film, but it's a wonderful film.
Yeah,
and whenever he first comes to teach them English and he's teaching them poetry, they start reading out of this prescribed text of how to analyze poetry.
Yeah.
And he's like, all right, I want you to take that book. I don't want you to rip it up. you're not supposed to, like, look at it this way. And like, you can see how it can be looked at in that way with dancing and all that stuff. But then it is taken to its ridiculous extreme of, I just want to dance. And that is just so funny. But I think that the style of it is that it's a pastiche, but the narrative is very heartfelt and real. It's like James Gunn movie, you know?
It's like a hard thing to balance, and it doesn't always work out, but I think it does very much work out in this. And I just love things like Fran. They take the piss even out of these movie cliches of when you first see Fran, like, she's very greasy, loads of spots, and within like dancing with this guy for like a couple of nights, like, her skin's
clears
like,
up,
and like just progressively she gets more dolled up, let's say.
It's
just really funny. They don't even the fact that they don't even commit to that, like, it's kind of like you just know what that is. You know, that's the like Cinderella type story thing.
It's this joke that happens throughout a montage.
Yes.
By the end of it, you're like, oh, okay, all right, I guess that happened at some point.
Because like a good portion of Dirty Dancing is dancing montages of her getting better, and this kind of is as well, but this does it in a more hilarious way.
This one, it's extremely funny. Like, when you're watching Dirty Dancing, you're like, okay, I see where this is going. Obviously, by the time she gets done with it, she's gonna be better. Whereas in this, you're like, this is fucking hilarious. You know? And then, like, when she, like, shows him their little tappy-tap move, and he's like, show me that again. It's fucking hilarious. Like, oh, ooh, she did some tappy-taps. Wow.
I love when he asked his friend, the ginger fella, like, he goes, what did you think of my dancing? He's going, I don't know.
No, he doesn't know what to say because he hasn't been told what to think about it, because he can't wrap his head around it.
I mean, even things like that, you know, there's so much, okay, like, they might not have meant it to be, but there's so much you could read into that, you know, if you really want to delve into the satire nature of it.
Yeah, and like, also, they do the whole thing with like going to meet her family. And you're expecting the cliche, and they start off making you think they're going to do the cliche, we don't approve of this dancing boy. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh no, they're all dancers, and they're all better than him. Like, her grandmother is a better dancer than he is. And he's like, oh shit, all these people are amazing. And like, as well, my wife pointed out when we were watching it, it was really funny. The place where they live is this blasted post-apocalyptic hellscape under a bridge with just this corner shop in the middle of it that they live in, and it's like a food place that just smokes in the window. But then they have this sort of idyllic back place that's like this Spanish veranda that they all kind of hang out on, and it's so stylish and effortlessly cool and dumb all at the same time. It's fucking excellent. And the dialogue, in direct opposition to fucking Dirty Dancing, the dialogue is fantastically well written. Some of it's super like real and like, you know, like, oh, this is believable dialogue, and some of it is just really funny because people are so like starstruck by these idiots. And like, whenever people the sort of passionate cliches get thrown at exactly the right time every time. You know, this is so fucking stupid.
It's funny you mentioned Spinal Tap, because it made me kind of go, fuck, I should watch Best in Show and
Best
Waiting
in Show
for Guffman, and a lot of these other big ones that I kind of equate to the same kind of idea.
This starts like Best in Show, where you have like
the two people sitting talking, and then it cuts to like the dog show, and then it cuts back to them.
Yeah.
And it's just really funny. The guy with was it Eugene Levy and his two left feet. he's talking about dancing, or he wasn't able to dance very well because he's got two left feet, and then it pans down and he's actually got two left feet, and it's a dumb joke, but it's really funny and has stayed with me forever.
But those kind of movies, like, the, you know, they're again satires on these like weird wee things that actually exist in the world. Like, people who go to dog shows are,
yeah,
not all of them, but probably quite a lot of them are mental. Mm. There's mental Absolutely. People who go to those things. Same with like ballroom dancing competitions. There's people who take it way too seriously.
Yeah.
And it's the same with everything. I'm just not like, I'm just picking those ones because there's specific movies.
Like Christopher Guest has done. I mean, he did Best in Show when he's in Spinal Tap and wrote it with him and Mike McKean, wrote that together with Rob Reiner. And like, he's made a career out of making films about those kinds of people. There's another film called A Mighty Wind that's about folk musicians.
That was the one I couldn't remember the name of.
Yeah, that's sort of the sort of unofficial sequel to Spinal Tap because it's all them again. It's all the guys from Spinal Tap, but they're a folk band reuniting. And it's
apparently
it's
did you hear
excellent.
They open for themselves?
Did they come out as A Mighty Wind and they play Spinal
Tap? They were booed
show?
Off stage, which is just
brilliant.
Like, icing on the cake.
That's so good. I love that Spinal Tap were a working band for a while. That is really funny to me that they toured as Spinal Tap. Yeah. I think it's great.
Brilliant. Talented
but
fuckers.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of Spinal Tap. There's a lot of Christopher Guest style of thing you can see in this.
Yeah. Like even the way it's shot is like, because I mean, I suppose especially Baz Luhrmann, you know, this is, if not his first one, like one of his early ones. You know, you can already see that he has a good knack for it, where there's like comedic things, like the way the camera zooms into characters, like almost like those Indian like drama TV series. Like, there's over the top shots which wouldn't work if this was serious. It would be cheesy as fuck, but because of the way the entire movie is, it just hammers home the ridiculousness and the over the top nature of everything, and
super close ups of people's faces when they're saying things that are ridiculous, that super seriously, are comedy gold.
And the lighting, like, and everything. And that sequence whenever it's going through his dad, like when his dad's
life in the dancing show. It's so weird. It's so fucking weird. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, it sort of demonstrates a real understanding of the craft.
Yeah.
Someone, I think this was his first. This is his directorial debut.
I would say so. Yeah, I would.
This is his first film, and it's amazing that this is his first film. Like, the parts where, like, there's like two or three parts where people are having conversations while they're dancing a foxtrot or something, and they're like, they're right up on each other. There's a point where I can't remember the name of the character that's talking to the main guy. He's one of the judges, and he wants to speak to him, but it's in the middle of a dance class, so he has to go over and like talk to him, and he's like telling him off while they're dancing back and forth, and this is close-ups of both their faces flipping back and forth, and it is just like, the camera is funny there.
Yeah,
that's the camera is doing a joke,
yeah,
because it's like right up on them, and he's like so serious. Oh, it's so good. Yeah, so
pitch perfect. Like, everyone in it is pitch perfect, and as you say, like, even to make the camera part of the joke, and like to make it it just works very well, and it's extremely good.
This film is a very good film. I think it's excellent, actually.
Shockingly, because this is kind of, I think we would have probably, like, we had mentioned Footloose, and we probably would have picked that as our third, or like one of our three with these other two. Only, I think we both kind of just wanted to watch this again.
Yeah, good excuse to watch.
Good excuse to watch this. And I don't remember enjoying Footloose. Fuck it.
No.
We can always watch that if we do, like, weird repressed towns.
Weird repressed towns. I don't know if that's a genre. I guess Pleasantville
I'm near sure I could find at least three movies.
I've thought of Pleasantville already would fit in that. Anyway, we can't do this. We're not to do this on the air. This is one of those backroom things. All right. Yep. But suffice to say, John, Dirty Dancing is not great in all the ways that this film is great.
Strictly Ballroom definitely approves upon all the dirty dancing problems.
It's almost like the Jungian shadow of dirty dancing, if you'll permit me a sort of a psychology term.
Ooh.
I know. It's literally it excels in all the places where dirty dancing is bad. Because the dialogue's great. It's like beautifully shot in a way. The story's actually compelling when it shouldn't be. But it really is. But then if you look at the narrative as being the relationship between these two people, then that is compelling because they're actually interesting characters that I like. Yeah. Whereas he didn't like anybody in Dirty Dancing, except maybe her dad. And the ginger guy was all right too.
They were kind
of the background players were way more interesting than the main cast. I'll say that.
I think again, the problem was it wasn't that they were dislikable. It was just like there wasn't anything to them. Where even this parody of it essentially like. They still then they have more character in their characters. Yeah. Like, you know, the mum is kind of annoying, but still kind of likable in a way. And you know, the judges all have their own thing and their own reasons to kind of
Some of them more sinister than others. yes.
And then like even the dad who doesn't really say much. Like once he starts kind of coming out, you're like, hey, Grim.
He's so interesting because he doesn't say anything though. It's what he's doing, the things you see him do when he thinks no one's watching are what make him fascinating.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's up with him? And then you get that background thing, and then you're like, but then you're like, oh, but how much of that is really true? Who is he really? You know, and that stuff, it's super compelling. And again, it's very stupid, but it's wonderfully stupid and heartfelt. I think that's a really good, like, it reminded me of a James Gunn movie, like something like Slither, that is kind of a pastiche of these films while being a homage and there being this sort of love of the form at the core of it somewhere.
Yeah.
And a love of characters and people at the center of it. Whereas to me, in a way, I almost feel like Dirty Dancing is cynically made.
Yeah.
To be like, it's a dancing movie. We got a sexy man. He's going to dance.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, just it boils down to that. It's not taking piss out of the art form itself. Just
no.
Not even how all people, the people. Just
how some people view it and treat it. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really... Yes, that's exactly correct, I think. Yeah. It's taking the piss out of the way some people feel about dancing and dancing movies. Yeah. 4.5. No, damn. I've defied my own scale, John.
Yeah, and I never like that when people do use a 5-star scale and then go points.
That.
And it's like,
well,
what the fuck's
me.
The point? Just
that's
go for 10.
10. That's a 10-star.
Yeah.
Or it's when they do like it's when they reduce it down to like 0.1 and 0.2 and 0.3 and you're like, you're a liar. You're trying to get a percentage in here, which is the most useless of review scales. Because again, I've done this before, I've whinged about this before, but when you have an out of 10 or a percentage scale, people only use 5 to 10 or 50 to 100.
Yeah.
Unless something is absolutely unbelievably dire, and then they always go for the comical, like 4%.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at like Rotten Tomatoes, everything's between 50 and 100, except for some things, which are like, between 2 and like 25, and you're like, that's not like they don't use the range between like 25 and 50. That doesn't get touched.
Yeah,
you know, and you're like, it's no point, just go 5 stars, star rating. But that doesn't work for like when you get like aggregate sites and they're trying to get an average. That doesn't work. But anyway, balls to all that stuff, John. Balls to the rating system. Time for some spooky horror dancing.
Yeah.
Spooky horror dancing, everyone. It's a horror film about dancers.
Something that has done very well in the aggregated sites.
Yeah, the thing I was just moaning about.
Aggregated fit sites.
These
marbles out of my mouth.
M Averagers. They've done well in the Averagers. This is Black Swan, directed by Darren Aronofsky. And I'll just read the log line for that. It's from 2010. Nina is a talented but unstable ballerina on the verge of stardom. Pushed to the breaking point by her artistic director and seductive rival, Nina's grip on reality slips,
plunging her into a waking nightmare. John, what did you think of Black Swan?
That's still great. This it's movie's still good. Fucking it's great. Still this yeah. I love this movie. It's like a psychological horror.
Absolutely. It's a thriller. It's not a...
fantastic. Like, it is... Yeah. Like, the... I did a wee bit of reading up on this one, actually. Ooh. Just kind of by accident, just because I was interested in... I forget what started it, but... Natalie Portman, I think this is definitely her best performance. Like, she is fucking brilliant in this. And she must have really been passionate about this project because she paid for herself to go through the ballerina lessons or the ballet lessons. Long before it was even like that, they got the go ahead that the movie was going ahead and stuff like this. You know, so she was very passionate. She got pay cuts and everything. Even that like horrible scene where she's getting physio and the girl has her hand like right up in her rib. That was real. And to save money, they thought, can we just get that recorded with you being in character?
Is he doing the physio?
Yeah, so like a lot of that stuff because she got injured quite often. And and apparently like a good 80% of the dancing is actually her.
I believe that. I mean, they make a point at the very beginning, the opening scene, the opening shot, is you see the feet.
Yeah.
And you see her, and then you see the feet, and you think, all right, this is one of those things where they're like, let's shoot the upper body with the actress, and then we'll get a real dancer.
Yes, yeah.
But they see the feet, and you see her dancing, and you see the feet, and then it just pans up, and it's her. And you're like, that's really cool that she's actually doing a lot of this dancing herself.
Yeah.
That's someone throwing themselves into a role. And I really appreciate that. However, I don't begrudge anyone who doesn't.
No.
Because as we see throughout the course of this film in particular, it's rough. It's unpleasant.
Like, that obsessiveness to get things perfect. And like Nina as a character is...
Yeah.
Like, and that's probably why like Natalie Portman portrays her so well, because she kind of did the same thing. She lost, like, and like, you know, Natalie Portman's not someone who's you would ever say was overweight or like had weight to lose. She lost 8 stone, was it?
What?
To play Nina, and it's like,
it can't be 8 stone.
That's why.
That's like one whole Natalie Portman. No.
I think I'm... Or I no, sorry, like 8 pounds. Sorry. No,
that's all right.
Did I say something?
I was going to say, that's an entire Natalie
Portman. That's an entire Natalie Portman. No, sorry, 8 pounds. My brain wasn't working there.
That's all right. That's okay.
But even still, like, you know, that's why she's so kind of emaciated and kind of looks like anything would break her.
Yeah, very fragile, to the point where she literally does break at times. So... I think this film is very well constructed. I think it's extremely... As far as editing goes, this film is very good.
Yes.
This film is really well edited together.
From the get-go, from the... The very first scene is, like, that dream she has where she's dancing and then the kind of demon fucking... The thing appears and just...
Yeah.
Like, the way the shots are orchestrated is fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
How it comes in.
Yeah. And it's, like, it's so well lit. This film is so well lit. It's moody and it's dark and it's sinister. And they have a lot. They do a lot of stuff with like things in the dark that you can't quite see.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure. I assume they're using computer effects for some stuff. Some of the computer effects look a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
But I can forgive it because a lot of them are used really in a really clever way.
Yeah.
There's parts where they do some really good stuff with like. Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman's faces, where you're like looking and you're like, who is that?
Yeah.
And sometimes you're not sure which one it is, and it's like obviously deliberate, and it's creepy as fuck. And, you know, it's going to the whole metaphor of like she's her own worst enemy and she's self destructive and she's doing this to herself in a lot of ways. And whether or not, and they have some of the stuff where it's like, did this really happen or not? Or is she fucking with her?
I mean, like, she basically dreams up the rivalry with Lily.
Yeah, like, there's not a real rivalry. If anything, Lily's looking for a friend.
Yeah.
And thinks she's found a friend.
Like, she doesn't really give a fuck. She's a lot more laid back with the whole thing of, like, like, I'm your understudy. And, like, I don't, the way Mila Kunis portrays her, I don't get the sense that, like, she's gunning for her...
No.
For her role. And
not at all.
Even at the times she is like that, or seems a wee bit, like, you know, might be more sinister, it's always done in a way where I think it's Nina projecting that onto her.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Which makes sense that sometimes when she looks at her, she has her face.
Yeah.
She's got her own face, and she's literally, that's a literal projection almost. And there's some great stuff with just, like, her mum. Her mum's a horror show.
Jesus, yeah. Her mum is...
She's so realistically written in a way, though. Yeah. I mean, you can see she's a proper stage mom,
yep,
to use the American parlance.
She's definitely one of the antagonists in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
The sense that, like, even from the get-go, there's something just not quite right about their relationship, where it's not a mother-daughter one, really, and it's creepy, and it's kind of like... You can already tell, like, Nina's fulfilling the dreams that her mother never got to realize.
Yeah,
and goes maybe, back to what you just said there of, like, she's a proper, like, thing mom, industry mom,
a stage mom,
stage mom,
or a pageant mom, or one of those revolting human beings.
Yep,
who are all just deeply, deeply, deeply psychologically damaged themselves. But just pass that on to their kids aggressively, which is exactly what's happening here. Because I get the impression, there's parts of the film where you get the impression, like, she's excited by the fact that she's doing well, but deep, deep down, she doesn't want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
She's proud of it, and she's excited because this is the thing she's been working towards. But in a lot of ways, it's like, she doesn't want to do this. She wants to go out drinking with this girl and get tanked and maybe sleep in and, you know, and just do things, like, live the life a bit. And it's like, nah, you got to go break your fucking ankles. You got to go smash your feet up and starve yourself and, you know, so you can prance about on a stage for an hour and a half and hurt yourself even worse.
And I mean, that all feeds into the whole reason, like, she's perfect for the White Swan. But not the Black Swan, the director's saying from the get-go, basically.
Aye.
Because she can't let go. She's very disciplined and very, like, she's the best dancer there on a technical level, but there's more to it than that. And it goes back to what we said earlier about, like, art isn't just about perfection and, like, making sure you hit the notes and hit the... hit your marks at the right time. Like, there's more to it than that. Like, to actually have something shine through, you need passion and you need a bit more artistry, and that's, like, what they're trying to get out of her.
Yeah, he's also engaging in a lot of, like,
he's fucked
psychological
up.
Manipulation.
He's a fucking asshole.
He's a piece of shit. played to perfection by Vincent Cassel.
Yeah.
Man, that guy's such a good actor. that guy's so good. But he's absolutely hateful in this, and everybody sort of knows it as well.
Like, everyone basically knows that he takes advantage of the dancers, but it's almost treated as of just like, but that's the industry kind of thing.
Yeah, that's way it is. He gets results. It kind of reminded me a lot of Whiplash, which was that the same year as this Whiplash came out?
I think Whiplash was later
4 years
than this.
Later. I think 2014, maybe.
Yeah, I think Whiplash was a good bit later than this.
Yeah, but there's a fair amount of this kind of behavior in Whiplash, but in Whiplash, it's a lot. I can forgive it a lot more in a way. Although the guy in Whiplash is a piece of shit.
He's
in his
a piece
own
of shit
fashion.
As well, yeah.
But he's not, you know, he's not trying to fuck his students.
Yeah, this is more of a Weinstein. This is more of a Weinstein, to give a real kind of analogy.
This is way more of a Harvey Weinstein kind of scenario.
Yeah.
Than a Whiplash scenario, and yet everyone's sort of letting it happen because he's, you know, getting the results and making the show happen, and it's like it's a whole other layer of sinister to it.
Yep.
And her mum is even almost, like, you know, party to that as well.
Yeah, because she even asked her, but, like, it's not done in a way of, like, looking out for. It is, there's something even weird the way she asked the question of, like, or it's not a question. What does she say? it's like accusatory or something of like, oh, you were out late with him. Sure, he enjoyed like showing you around, like a prize, and like, you know, almost like a jealousy thing. And you're going,
yeah,
what the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah, and then you have the whole like Winona Ryder's thing where she's like retired. She's been forcibly retired.
Yeah. Because she's ancient.
Because she's so old. Because she's like 35 or whatever.
Yeah.
Which, as far as like, I mean, that tracks with like a lot of like physical things.
Oh, yeah.
Like athletes, it's the same thing.
Yep.
Like athletes are usually retiring when they get into their early 30s.
Yeah.
And shit like that, which is wild. And like the same thing with like dancers and stuff, any kind of like gymnasts and stuff like that have ruined themselves by the time they hit 30.
Yep.
Usually, or into their 30s, you know. And like that whole thing with her is just really creepy. And it's just like the cycle begins anew, it feels like. And like, oh, this is where you're going. It feels like when she goes to like visit her in the hospital and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, that's going to be you soon enough, you know. And there's Mila Kunis coming up. Like Lily is... She starts to view her in the way that Beth, Winona Ryder's character, was maybe looking at her previously. And it's fucking horrible. But yeah, it's I love all the horror stuff in this.
Yeah.
I love all the psychological horror. Like, there's a great part where she's like standing between two mirrors and the reflections are going off into the distance.
Mm-hmm.
But like some of the reflections are like looking around at her. And stuff, and they're, and like, that's so creepy and it's great.
Real, like, creepy psychological stuff that really...
Absolutely, yeah.
Works very well.
Yeah, it's really sinister, and the kind of thing that, like, you could imagine someone who is very sleep-deprived and stuff like that, and stressed out, would genuinely, like, look at, like, something like that and maybe think they saw it move, or get, like, in their head about it, like, what, that's not me down there at the end of the line. You know, stuff like that. And, like, that stuff's handled really well.
Like, even the pacing of these things, of, like, her decline and the kind of like getting, like, losing her mind that bit more as it goes on, the way it all ramps up is fantastic. Like, it doesn't...
Yeah.
This movie flies by for me every time, and it's always so, like, so interesting, so involved with her. Like, you're kind of just like, I just want to go in and help. You just want to, like, just like, go fucking have a rest, will you?
Just go in and shake her and be like, stop! Just stop it!
It's just dancing!
Just go to bed, like, it's grand! Just chill out! Yeah. So, yeah, this movie's really well made. It's really well put together. It might be my favorite Darren Aronofsky film, I think.
I would say it's mine, yeah.
Because he's made other films that were good, but, you know, I might go back and look at them now and be like, I don't know. Like, Requiem for a Dream is just too relentlessly miserable.
Yeah. It's fantastic. Like, I love that movie, but it's a wee bit...
it's relentlessly miserable. Pie, I quite liked as well. Pie was very, very good. But I haven't liked a lot of his other films apart from this.
Yeah.
Especially, like, he did that one... Was that...
The Wrestler he did, and then...
The Wrestler was alright. Mother, was that one of his?
Yes,
It wasn't good. Like, it wasn't very good at all, I didn't think.
Mm.
The Fountain is, you know...
Kind of.
Yeah. Sorry, people talked a lot about it at the time, but I was never that, you know... I haven't seen The Whale yet.
The Whale's very good. Actually, I forgot he did that one, I'd highly recommend The Whale.
Yeah, it looked good.
Yeah,
but I haven't gotten around to seeing it yet, so reserve judgment on that. But yes, Black Swan's really, really, really good. I say the editing's fantastic. The CG is mostly used sparingly and well. There's one moment that I thought it was bad, where she goes into a room full of paintings and they're all laughing.
Oh yes, yeah.
And it really. I don't think it was necessary.
No,
I don't think it. It's the kind of thing that you might look back at after you made the film and be like, we don't need that shot.
Yeah.
She's already mad enough. We don't need this shot of her standing in the middle of a room full of her mother's weird paintings laughing at her. Because, like, I just thought it looked like a CG mulch.
Yeah.
I didn't like it. But the rest of it, her transformation into the swan at times looks great.
Yeah.
When it's like, it's almost like, the bird skin, like chicken skin almost, like puckering up along her shoulders. Because
it even does that kind of subtly The first couple of times you're like, did I see that right?
Literal goosebumps. Yeah. There you go. Because it catches you a lot with it. Did I notice something there, or was that just was I just not like whenever the faces change, I find that a lot.
Yeah.
Where you're a lot of the time you're like, wait, was it different? Was that Natalie Portman's face or not? Sometimes it's so brief.
Yeah.
And in the dark that you're just like, you're maybe even imagining it sometimes that it's happening and it's not happening.
Yeah.
But like they style her, there's bits where they style her hair exactly the same and stuff, and she's like in the distance and you're like, wait, hold on a minute. Is that Natalie Portman or is that? And like, it's really clever. I think it's really good. It's a great thriller, and if you want to call it a horror movie, you wouldn't be wrong.
I don't think so. I think it's genuinely horrific, and it has that whole I would say psychological horror, because most of it is just this obsessiveness.
Yeah.
And like how destructive that can be to a person. Like, so that adds a level of realness to it, which makes it more horrific. That,
indeed.
Yes, a lot of the imagery and a lot of the hallucinations are, of course, in her head, but this can kind of happen to anyone, really, if you get too obsessive with stuff.
Yeah, if you get too much fucking stress piled on you, and then you become obsessed with something, and then you're living with a mother, you're like 29 or whatever, and living with your ma, who's like that.
Yeah.
Absolutely boogaloo, I would be. So, yeah, great film.
And again, just have to stress, like, the performances in it are fantastic. Like, both the physical performances of the dancing and the actual acting in it is superb. Like, Natalie Portman has this, because she gets criticized a lot, a lot of the times justly, that she has that, like, kind of almost baby-like voice in certain movies, but in this, it works because it just reinforces that like ridiculously innocent nature of her at the beginning.
Being infantilized a lot by the people around her in authority. Like, her mother really treats her. Her mother treats her like she's 12.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at her room, and it is the room of a 12-year-old. All the stuffed animals, and it's all pink. Yeah. And not saying you can't have a pink room.
That's fine.
The age of 12, but.
Yeah, that's fine, but at the same time, it's all the teddy bears and stuff, and she's like near 30, and you're like, come on, now. You're near 30, you've got a room full of teddy bears, and you're living with your man. Something's up there, something is wrong there. So, I think it's great. I think it's a good, if you want it to be a horror movie, it is. It's a really great psychological thriller, if anything, and I think on a technical level, I think it's fucking marvelous. So, John, did I win? Am I the best dancer in West Antrim?
Strictly ballroom has shown us. So we can always do a wee backhander here and there.
We can get into spoilers for all these movies, by the way. spoilers for all three of these films.
Yep.
Yes. Of course. Yeah. The old. The whole thing's a setup kind of thing, and that's really the key to the father's thing as well. All that stuff is very, very good in Strictly Ballroom.
Because they have to maintain the status quo.
Indeed, John. So as far as like learning about dancing, well, we'll get to that in a minute about what we learned about dancing and how to judge good dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But John, which of these do you think was the best movie, though? What do you reckon?
For me, well, I think the best movie is definitely Black Swan. Mm. The one I enjoyed the most is probably Strictly Ballroom, and just like a kind of. Although, no, you know what? That's not even true, because the way you enjoy these movies are very different.
Yeah,
like you can't really compare a comedy to a. Psychological thrillers, stroke
and
horror.
Yet that's the bed we have made for ourselves with the entire premise of this show.
Yep.
So do it. Do it.
Black Swan.
I feel like the asshole sort of dance director now, or the guy from Whiplash. Do it! Do it! Compare these two movies! I'm forcing you to do it. I don't care if you break your fucking ankles. Make a comparison. So you're choosing Black Swan as the best movie, you think?
Yeah, definitely.
See, I think I'm going to go for Strictly Ballroom because I think it's fucking excellent. Yeah. I think it's wonderful, yeah. Like, Black Swan is absolutely, like, you know, it's so well made. And it's really well, the story is compelling as fuck, and all that. But I just love the style and the... I love how funny and heartfelt Strictly Ballroom is.
Yeah.
It's absolutely just magic with that stuff. It is so, so good. It is so funny. And genuinely heartwarming at times, you know? Whereas this Black Swan
really say Black Swan is heartwarming. Yeah,
Black Swan is like this cold sort of Baroque painting of hell or something that someone's done in a museum, and you're like, wow, look at that. That's so sinister, and all the little details in it, like it's like that kind of is it I can't remember what you call that painter. He did like a lot of things from like where he would do like apocalyptic scenes.
Was yes, and vaguely know who you're talking about.
I can't remember his name, but it's wonderful. And it's all like full of tiny little details of like, oh, these guys are being tortured down here, and these people have been thrown into this pot, and this big thing's like all these people are being poured into this big thing's mouth, and inside it down here there's a lake of fire, and it's just this amazingly detailed, beautifully rendered painting.
Yeah,
that's Black Swan. Whereas for me, then you've got like over here, you've got Strictly Ballroom, which is like that Spanish artist who does all the wee people who look like dumpling people, all like looking at the camera going, ooh, and stuff. And like, it's really, really well painted, but it's adorable and everyone's chubby and, you know, it's a bit silly. And if I was going to hang one of those in my house... This is a really weird analogy, but if I was going to hang one of those in my house, it'd be the wee chubby, adorable people, probably. As far as Dirty Dancing goes, you know,
it's all right. It's
It is what it is.
It is what it is, and it could have been worse. I think it's there's
always a great sort of thing to say about a film. Well, it could have been worse.
I mean, I think the main problem we had, I think if it had just stuck with the era it was in, not that movies have to, you can have anachronistic things happening and it makes sense for whatever you're trying to, whatever story you're trying to tell, but I don't know why they had to go for the 80s songs. It was jarring to both of us. We both said this plenty of times at this stage, but there's an interesting, like, the movies that made us. Series that's on Netflix. There's an interesting one about Dirty Dancing. There's a lot of, you know, the what do you call the actors again?
Patrick Swayze.
Patrick Swayze.
How could you forget the Swayze Master?
My brain just goes blank now and then.
Patrick Swayze and Jennifer Grey
Grey. Like, they did not get on throughout the making of that. And falling out. And it's kind of one of these movies that... it's a miracle it got made, kind of thing. Whether or not, you know, whether or not you think that is worth it, but it
whether
made,
or not I think it's miraculous that this film was made.
I'm sure the film companies thought it was because it made them a fucking shit ton of money.
Oh, this is one of the most famous movies ever.
Yeah,
like this is the kind of movie that, like, much like a film, like, you know, it gets cult status. It's one of those films that's super popular and has a cult following.
Yeah.
Where it's kind of like something like the Rocky Horror Picture Show, where they'll be showing it in the cinema and everyone will go all dressed up.
Yeah.
You know.
Take umbrage that, as we were talking, like, in the... because I have IMDb. Yeah. Up at the time and when we were talking about it, I could see in the corner of my eye, like, the wee... like 30th anniversary version, and all these like blurbs that come up of like the greatest story ever, one of the greatest stories ever told. I do take umbrage with that.
The story's not, it's not a good story.
No, it's absolutely
fucking
rubbish.
The story is the worst
rubbish.
Part of the film. Yeah. It's the worst thing in it because it is rubbish. Like, yeah. It's a rubbish story.
You know,
but
what you want about it, but it's not, it's not a great story.
The dialogue is bad and the story is crap.
Yeah.
But everyone's enthusiastic in their performances. And it's pretty well put together, aside from my aforementioned aggravation with the too much reverb on all the sound effects for some goddamn reason, where I was very, very aware that I was hearing dubbed in sound effects that had been treated rather than, like, it was very, let's see, not that I was terribly immersed to begin with, but it would have been very immersion breaking if I had been, you know?
Yeah. And I do think you're picking Strictly Ballroom, and that makes perfect sense. And I do have a bit of a dilemma between the two, but I suppose I always gravitate towards the darker things. So, I just love that whole end sequence whenever Nina is losing her mind completely, and now that we can talk about, because spoilers,
on Black Swan, the end of Black Swan, yeah, significant ending.
Yeah, like, we're even when she goes to see Beth, and then Beth starts stabbing her own cheek, or maybe Nina's stabbing her, or who knows what's even happening.
She's holding the nail file covered in blood as she leaves the room, and she looks out and she's like, why do I have this in my hand? We don't get a shot to see what happened to Beth.
Nope.
If she stabbed her in the face and murdered her, maybe?
It's so many things left unanswered in that. And even the, when she attacks Lily, and she becomes the Black Swan at the end, near the end.
Does she attack Lily?
Yeah, well, she doesn't, because then Lily appears and goes, you were
amazing.
Fantastic.
I was so impressed. And she's like, what the fuck?
Which I think
she's like, it's the fact that, I stabbed myself.
Yeah.
Thorp.
And I just love Natalie Portman's acting during this whole stage when she the realization. It's just fucking pitch perfect. It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
And then goes out and does her literal swan song.
Yeah. Quite literally the swan song, indeed. Yeah, so I have no problem with you picking that as a good film. I was thinking about
of you.
I know. I didn't mean that to come off in that way. In that, I was just trying to communicate.
I'll let you this time.
I was just trying to communicate that I myself had a bit of had to have a bit of a think about this.
Yeah.
Often when we do this show, we'll be like, "Well, this is obviously the best one. Yeah. This is the one where we wanted to watch this movie, and then we had to come up with two other movies to sub in." But this was not the case in reality.
This is one of these ones that is just down to whatever mood you're not going to watch Strictly Ballroom in the same mood that you would watch Black Swan.
No, not
like you're not going to be in the mood for one of them. You're not going to be in the mood for both of them at the same time.
You wouldn't be sitting holding the two DVDs and being like, am I going to watch Black Swan or am I going to watch Strictly Ballroom right now? I don't know. Oh, because they're both about dancing.
Have I been too happy lately?
I think I'll watch Black Swan, and then I'll watch Grave of the Fucking Fireflies right after, and then that'll just be it for me forever. Which I did go see the new Miyazaki movie last night, actually, and I would maybe like to talk about that in a way, but I'm not going to do that. I've sort of managed to accidentally stumble into that there, but it was all right. Yeah. I'll say that. It was all right. Anyway, enough of that. But as far as, John, which of these movies do you think gives us the best sort of understanding of dance as a medium or as a sort of as something to be judged or how to rate, say, good dancing? Because there's sort of this line I find in all these films because Black Swan's all about following the lines in a way, but then you have the arsehole being like, but when you're the Black Swan, you have to feel it. And They all explore that in a way of like
brilliant impression.
That was Vincent Castle right there. Yeah, it was like
he was in the room.
Yeah. It was like he burst in through the wall and just started spewing just stereotypical French noises.
I don't know when Kevin ends and Vincent begins.
Like. Oh, I every morning I wake up and that's the conundrum. Yeah, so that film explores a lot of like, you know, the art versus the prescription.
In a way, I think all three of them, yeah, because there's always this thing of like, it's not enough to learn the moves and the steps, right. And like you have to feel it. You know, you have Patrick Swayze tapping the heart thing and going, oh, you have to feel the beat. And you've got...
And then we have a really similar scene in Strictly Ballroom that is done way better.
Yeah.
Where the grandmother is tapping his heart to give him the rhythm.
Yes.
And it's so much better than it is in Dirty Dancing to a degree that is embarrassing, I think, for Dirty Dancing. But that, then they're all about... Because he's got that thing, but he wants to try... He wants to be creative. And he's being creative, but he almost learns how to do that better when he meets her family, and that I find that really, that again, that was one of the most compelling things in the film, I think, was him like finding all these people who do it for the love of it, you know, and then he's got this other world of like the competition level and the ratings, and then in Dirty Dancing it's like you have to teach these oldies how to foxtrot, and he's like, but I want to dance, and it's so stupid, and like we're in the after hours, and he comes walking into the after hours underground club, and they're like, wow, yeah, you're here, and he comes in and he's like, yeah, and he's like taking his shirt off and like walking through the crowd dancing, you know, and it's like, this is fucking daft. It's funny though, but like, yeah, so you've got that sort of like feel the passion with that nonsense in all of these films. But and then in Black Swan, it's more about like he's almost not clear about what he wants, to be deliberately confusing in Black Swan, I think.
Yeah.
Is the thing with him. And like he almost seems like he's just using it to break her and grind her down even more.
Yep. It does feel like psychological torture at times.
It is absolutely. So we don't want to be like that, John.
No.
I don't think we want to be like that. To be honest, if I wanted to be like anybody who is like judging good dancing, I think I would want to be the guiding light, I think, would be Fran's dad.
Yes, yeah.
Fran's dad in Strictly Ballroom, cuz him and his, I don't know if it's his mom or his dead wife's mother, her grandmother anyway, that he's dancing with, the two of them, they're the ones that I think you look at and you'd be like, that's the way to go. I think they're the ones. It's all about passion, John.
So basically, we're just saying, dance like no one's watching.
We didn't even have to watch these films, did we, John? You could have just said that. Why didn't you just say that?
Yeah,
you should. You would have saved us. You would have saved me watching Dirty Dancing. Yeah, fuck her.
But then you wouldn't have discovered it's about backstreet abortions.
I wouldn't have discovered it was about a botched backstreet abortion and having to cover for someone at their job because you paid for their botched backstreet abortion.
This is the gritty reboot we need.
Yeah, that it focuses on that aspect way more closely.
Or no, I still think it needs to focus on the elderly couple who rob people.
The weird, like, octogenarian pickpockets. They're the most interesting thing in the whole goddamn
film. In fact, I'm
surprised
it's not already a Netflix series.
Well, following them
from when they're, like, 40.
Yeah, they're really desperate for, like, side characters from things that have yet to be exploited on Netflix.
Yep.
So, yeah, after that Ratched show, all bets are off for, like, satellite characters that get their own show. Oh, my God. And that Burr... little to no fucking similarity to the actual character from the original work at all. Bunch of fucking bunk. Anyway, John. So the best people to learn from are Fran's grandmother and dad.
Yeah. I think it goes for all art, essentially. If you're not passionate about it, unfortunately, everyone's different. I mean, you have musicians like, you know, Charles Mingus and all, who are notorious for being perfectionists. And for like,
so you know, we're into Whiplash territory there.
But like, you know, I think, like, if you're not having any fun with it, then don't fucking do it.
Yeah, just
what's the fucking point? If you're not,
that's the best advice. Yeah. Yeah, if you're not having fun with it, don't do it. Like that guy in Strictly Ballroom who retires because of commitments to his landscape gardening firm. Yeah. It's just a really early joke in that film that is just fucking hilarious. Because they're all so serious and it's like it's their whole world. But then they mention that, like, no, he's retiring because he's got another job. He's got a job. Like, he has a job and a life outside of here. It doesn't appear like anyone else, like these people have anything outside of this. But this sort of interjection of that reality is really funny. Or he's like, because of commitments to his landscape gardening firm. Yep, brilliant. Great. So that's it then. We are not on Twitter. I still haven't deleted the Twitter account, John. But
just
I will
there
soon.
Festering.
We're on Instagram. Follow us on Instagram because we're class. that's really all we have to say. We'll be back in 2 weeks with another topic. I don't know. I don't usually end the show like this, but this is how I'm doing it today.
Yep.
And we'll just say, I guess, that we don't really... I never developed a catchphrase either.
No.
I never did, Raging. Oh, well. We'll just say bye.
Bye.
There you go. That's my catchphrase. Bye.